This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli. Here's Money, Riches, and Wealth. Christopher John S. J. is still with me.
I am. Drew, we're on a roll.
Yeah, this is kind of like Tom Bonbon Vasudo was with me for like 6 or 7 weeks.
And No. He only did three in a row.
Really?
Yeah. So
it was tax season, I thought.
I understand. He just did three. So yeah, I'm on a six-week roll, and then he'll be on forevermore. No, I'm kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, we have a guest tonight,
yeah,
and then open show. We go on that routine that we do.
Yep.
And so I just want to get one thing in. We had said for several months about having a guest on to discuss the advertising of these bonuses and all on annuities, and we have a guest on August the 10th that's going to come on for the whole show and talk about those things.
And I think that everyone will agree when they hear his name and his background and stuff that he's knowledgeable and completely objective.
Yeah.
So nobody could argue with that. So anyway, that's August 10th, but tonight we have a special guest, and it's a topic that we work a lot with our clients on,
yes,
and we work a lot on our own situation for the company to protect, and also personally. So it's a topic that everyone should be extremely attentive to.
And you're probably the most vigilant person I know personally on this topic. So this is a good thing to do. So we're with Steve Wiseman, and he's a lawyer. He's a college professor, award-winning journalist.
We won't hold the college professor against him. We're the lawyer, but all my family are lawyers, so go ahead.
That's true. You've come by it honestly. And one of the country's leading experts on scams and identity theft, he writes a column for USA Today. And the book we're talking about, although he's written about 9 books, 50 Ways to Protect Your Identity in a Digital Age, New Financial Threats You Need to Know About, and How to Avoid Them.
Steve, it's great to have you tonight.
It's terrific to be with you guys.
Hey, when we saw your book and then we did some background on who you are and how you've discussed the topic and so forth, we thought, man, this is somebody we have to interview, and, you know, as soon as we can, because this is probably one of the most important topics that every one of our listeners need to be attentive to.
You know, it really is. And the whole issue of identity theft, it is the biggest property crime in the United States today. And in fact, the cost of all other property crimes added up doesn't even total what we lose to identity theft. So it's a huge problem.
And it devastates people's lives when it happens. You know, if it's somebody just taking your credit card and buy a ticket to, you know, France or something, it's usually not that devastating. But when they really do the bad things, it can really wreck your life for a while.
Oh, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, one of my mottos is things aren't as bad as you think. They're far worse. Because identity theft can be actually deadly. One form of identity theft that doesn't get talked about enough is medical identity theft. When someone steals your medical information, and particularly your medical insurance, your health insurance information, because what happens is, not only do they get access to your insurance, but the identity thieves' medical records get interspersed with your medical records, and you could actually end up getting a blood transfusion for the wrong blood type. But to make it even worse, once you have found out that you become a victim of medical identity theft, it's almost impossible to, first of all, even get the information from the identity thief that's in your records, because under the HIPAA laws, he's protected or she's protected. And even then, once you identify it, it's almost impossible to get it out. The best that they usually can do is have a notation in there that this is disputed information. So that's a problem.
So not only, you know, being financial people and thinking, gosh, if somebody steals your identity and gets things in your medical records and so forth, you could lose disability insurance, you could lose long-term care insurance, you could be denied life insurance. All kinds of terrible things can happen.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things, you know, with health insurance, when you get a bill or sometimes a notice, the EOB, the explanation of benefits, I don't know who came up with the name because it explains nothing. You look at this thing, it's really confusing.
I'm an expert, and I get them, and I'll sit there and look at them. What are they trying to tell me, I think?
Oh, absolutely. And what so many of us do is we go to the bottom right-hand corner, do we owe anything? Don't have to say anything. And so people miss the fact that someone has actually accessed their insurance. And as you just mentioned, that can affect your ability to get future insurance.
So wait a minute.
It can affect your ability to get access to your own.
Okay, so help our listeners understand, because I'm not even sure, why would somebody, if I was really sick, I don't mind if they steal my medical identity. But if I'm, but why does somebody steal your medical identity? What's the purpose?
The big thing is that they get access to your medical insurance, and that's what they sell in the black market.
So somebody who's sick is taking my medical insurance and going to get medical help on my medical insurance.
Exactly.
Oh, that's really cool. I never thought about that. And nobody, the doctors and hospitals that take this fraudulent insurance don't know that it's not you?
Oh, yeah. They just take the insurance. They, you know, what's the insurance? They have it. Gets mixed in with your records. But as far as they're concerned, they're really not on the lookout for this. And frankly, the medical industry, which you've seen with so many of the biggest data breaches, like at Anthem with 91 million records stolen. This is what the big hackers are after, is they're after the health insurance information, which on the black market, what they call the dark web, where the hackers sell this information, where your credit card may go for $5 or $10, this will go for $300.
Wow.
So even for those who decide they're going to have virtually no footprint on the web, the fact that they're getting into these insurers and other sponsors means that you're exposed anyway.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem, is you're only as safe as the places that have your information. And, you know, maybe you don't want to, you want to keep yourself as low as an image as possible. And too many people put too much on social media that comes back to haunt them. But you're right. And here's a quickie bit of advice, and that is, when you go to the hospital, when you go to the doctors and they ask for your social security number, they don't need it. They really don't. The only reason they're taking it is to make it easier to collect if there's a problem with the bill later.
Right.
And the problem is that the medical industry has not done a particularly good job of protecting the data that they hold. And so if you can, give them another record. I went to my optometrist.
Well, Steve, before you go on, Steve, yep. We hate to do that. Hold that thought. We'll come right back to that.
Yeah, we got to take our traffic break, and then we're going to be right back, Steve, because we got a lot to talk about.
Sure,
digital
do.
Identity. Anyway, we're going to traffic. Take it away. We'll be right back. Money, Rich, and Wealth. Do you have a financial planner? Have you ever thought of hiring one, or just need a second opinion? The satisfaction guaranteed service of the financial physical is designed with you in mind. Many listeners, just like you, come to me, Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, looking for a firm that is fee-only and can offer comprehensive financial planning. The Financial Consulate has not grown by selling insurance, annuities, and bank products. Instead, we pride ourselves on the wealth of knowledge we can provide to you and your family. Learn more about the Financial Consulate and the services that we can provide at DrewTigg.com. That's DrewTigg.com. Or call to schedule a no-obligation introductory meeting at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with our digital song from Anita on 50 ways to protect your identity in a digital age. Steve, Chris and I have decided by the time we're finished listening to you tonight, he and I and our listeners are going to Montana and coming off the grid completely, because there's nothing we can do anymore once we finish listening to you.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I'll tell you a story. So I teach at Bentley University in Waltham, Massachusetts, but before I taught there, I taught in the state prison system in Massachusetts, and I had one of my students, and Chris may know how this works, being a lawyer. He was serving two consecutive life sentences, which meant that when he died, he would start his second sentence. And so I said to him, gee, that's really interesting. I always wondered, how's that work? And he said, yeah, I was kind of concerned about that myself. And I said to the judge when he sentenced me, how do you expect me to do two consecutive life sentences? And he said, he just looked down and said, just do the best you can. So that's what we could do. I mean, no matter what you can do, what you do, the IRS still has information about you. Various government agencies do, and you're only as safe as what they have there. But you do have a good point, and that is, keeping a lower profile online can make you safer. And too many people put up too much information on social media that can enable an identity thief to guess what your password is or the answer to your security question and change your email account password and take it over. So less is more, and it's not a bad idea to limit the information about you out there.
So let me ask you this question. You know, Chris and I are both CPAs, and we do a lot of tax returns, and the number one issue we're dealing with is the overwhelming amount of our clients that are having identity theft in the sense of tax returns. I specifically blame it on the IRS. They sent hackers who filed fake tax returns, billions and billions of dollars of fake refunds, that it just encouraged these guys to just keep doing this in a rampant way. I'd say over 10, 20% of our clients are now subject to identity theft to the IRS.
It is a huge, huge problem, and I share your blame, but I'm going to put it not just on the IRS, but on Congress. Here's one good spin, though.
We blame them for everything, though.
Well, you know, Mark Twain said the opposite of progress was Congress. But here's the only good spin you can put on this. The street crime in Tampa, Florida, which is a mecca for identity theft, and particularly income tax identity theft,
why?
Has gone down dramatically. Yeah, well, what's happened is, the street crime has gone down dramatically in the last few years because the gangs have gotten into income tax identity theft because it's just so damn easy to do.
You're kidding.
Here's one of the things where it is the IRS's fault. And forget about the fact that they're sending huge numbers of refunds to the same address and they can't pick up on this. As you probably are aware, but your listeners may not be, when an employer sends in a W-2 to the federal government, they send it in at the end of February or March, depending on whether they send it in by paper or electronically. But they don't send it to the IRS. They send it to the Social Security Administration. Social Security gets around to sending it to the IRS sometime in July. The IRS will match it with what's been filed as an income tax return in August and find out, oh, gee whiz, we just sent a huge return on a counterfeit W-2 to an identity thief, when all they would have to do is just, and this is something that the General Accountability Office has been suggesting they do for years, make employers send it to the IRS and have the IRS match the W-2s with what's sent in by the taxpayer or alleged taxpayer, and they'd be able to stop so much income tax identity theft. But neither the IRS nor Congress has been able to figure that one out.
It's unbelievable, Steve, because anybody could come up with just a few simple things that they could have done to stop sending refunds out, just carte blanche. But like you say, it's just too darn easy.
Oh, yeah. It is incredibly easy. And that's part of the thing where you see, you don't have to be a very sophisticated criminal to do this. All you need to do is steal someone's Social Security number, and then counterfeit a W-2, which is easy to do, and get your income tax return in before the legitimate taxpayer sends theirs in. And that's the one thing income tax...
Let me just tell a quick story, and then you can... I had a client who called me up, had identity theft. He got a letter from the IRS that said he and a woman with a different name than his wife had filed a tax return asking for a refund. And he says, Drew, what am I to do? And I said, Mac, you got a lot of splaining to do.
Exactly. Anyway, what he wanted to hear.
He was a good Southern boy. He took it night.
Yeah, that's good. Chris. Well, one of the things you mentioned in the book is what people can do for our tax software. We know a lot of listeners are using online tax software. So what can they do to do that more safely?
You know, one of the things that you want to do, and there's been a lot of hacking tax software that people use, and generally it has not been hacking of TurboTax and the companies themselves. What happens is people are using very, very simple usernames and passwords that that frankly are able to be guessed, or what happens is the income tax identity thief sends a phishing email that lures the victim into clicking on a link and downloading what we call keystroke logging malware that allows them to catch the password. You got to have a complex password. You don't ever click on links in emails until you've confirmed that they are accurate, and that will go a long way towards protecting you. You also, you know, the obvious, you're not going to use Wi-Fi or someone's unsecured computer to send out your tax return. You might even want to, when you got kids at home, you might even want to have the kids have their computer, because they will go for free music, free video games, and they'll download malware and have one computer that you use exclusively for your taxes, your online banking, paying your bills. And that one you don't click on any downloads, and you can keep it safer that way.
Now, are iPads safer than Windows-based machines?
Not anymore. You know, they at one time the
disappointed
Apple operating system was safer, and it was mainly a matter of numbers, because the Android operating system and Microsoft were used by so many more people.
Right.
That's where the scammers focused their attention. But now, as Apple has gotten so popular, there's plenty of malware to go around.
So we're going to have to take a short break in a second, as we actually call them pauses here on our show. But anyway, when we come back, we want to talk about some of these things like remove yourself from marketing lists and so forth, and opt-out screens and things of that sort. And should you do it? Why should you do it? Also, credit freezes. You know, should you do it? LifeLock, I get that asked all the time. Should I do LifeLock, et cetera, et cetera? So you got 20 seconds to give us a quickie intro to what we're going to talk about.
A lot of these services like LifeLock are like somebody telling you you've just been hit by a truck. It's better to stop the truck from hitting you, and the credit freeze will do that.
All right. Well, we're going to be interested to hear more of that. Right now, I'm going to take, watch this, Anita, a hard break right now, 629. Take it away, traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're here with Steve Wiseman and his book, 50 Ways to Protect Your Identity in a Digital Age. And we're not going to do 50 tonight, Chris. We're lucky if we're going to get to 5 or 6. But right now, we want to talk to Steve about all the things that you can start doing. So,
one of the things in the meantime, Drew, I just had a thought before I escape forever.
Yeah.
I thought I'd throw it out there. Steve has a website, Scamicide.
Scamicide. Spell that.
Scam.
Yeah.
I-C-I-D-E.
Scamicide.
Scamicide.com. And they'll put out there his USA Today articles that are published. And if you don't catch up and see those.
Yeah, I watched it. And he's got a lot of videos on there.
Some videos on there. And so anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I enjoyed it myself. So it's Scamicide.com.
C-S-C-A-M-I-C-I-D-E.
C-I-D-E. Scamicide.com. And, Steve, some of the things you can do, getting your name off a marketing list. So is this something we ought to be doing?
Yeah, it is a good idea, because when you get your name off of these marketing lists, particularly for what they call pre-approved credit cards, you're not really pre-approved.
How do you do that one?
Well, there are lists, and actually you can just you can go to Scamicide.com and up in the search the website, just put in marketing lists or taking yourself off marketing lists, and it'll give you the email addresses for you to send in. Because what happens is another way, identity theft is high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech, and one of the things that happens is people steal your mail. And they will steal your mail, including some of these pre-approved credit card offers.
Your U.S. mail.
Yep. And they'll steal that. They'll fill in the and get a credit card number in your name, particularly if they've been able to steal your Social Security number as well. Also, what they'll do is they'll steal. Some people will put outgoing mail in their mailbox and just put up the red flag as a notice to the postal carrier. It's also a notice to identity thieves that there's something in there that may even include a check, which will give them the ability to make counterfeit checks from your checking account. It may also have, it may be sending into a credit card company where they, on the back of what you send in, what they'll do is change your address. So the credit card statement will come to them, and maybe it's a month or two before you realize that your credit card bill isn't coming to you, and it's because the scammer has taken over your account and has even changed where the statement, monthly statement.
Now, did I get this story correct? I think I remember a story where there was a gang that would drive around in these big vans and have two or three kids on bicycles in the back, and they'd stop, and they'd open up the back doors, and boop, these kids would come out in these bicycles, zip around, throw a bunch of mail into a bag, boop, back into the van.
That wasn't just a nightmare you had one time.
I think I remember that story.
You know, it's a matter of fact. You know, that's one way that's commonly done. And the interesting thing is you told...
See, Chris? Wasn't a dream. Go ahead.
You told to shred documents so that when you throw them out, people aren't going dumpster diving through your trash to find personal information. Well, believe it or not, and this is particularly a problem in Arizona where there's a lot of methamphetamine addicts, there will be criminals that will gather up the vertically shredded material, give it to these methamphetamine addicts who stay up all night anyway, and they will piece it together. So when you get a shredder, get a cross shredder, because even the regular shredding doesn't always protect you.
I can't even put a puzzle together, let alone shredded document.
Well, it's good, yeah, well, it's a good thing you've never been a partaker of an abuser of that particular
that's true. That's
chemical
true.
Combination.
Well, here's, you know, so let's go on to LifeLock. I get that asked all the time, yeah. LifeGuard and so forth, and credit free. So let's do LifeLock and them first. What are they all about? Should you be paying 5, 10, 15, 20 bucks a month to these companies?
You know, they can provide some services for you. The Federal Trade Commission has had a number of actions against LifeLock on a couple of interesting grounds. One is that they overpromised what they were actually doing, but perhaps even more interestingly was they weren't protecting the data. So you were actually vulnerable to identity theft with information you're giving LifeLock. They can be helpful. They're not doing anything that you can't do for yourself, but a lot of people may not do it for themselves. However, what I always say is, again, as before the break mentioning, it's like you're crossing a street, you get hit by a truck, someone comes over and tells you, hey, you've just got hit by a truck. And that's LifeLock. They're telling you quickly after the event has occurred that you're a victim. It is better to prevent it. And here's the dirty little secret. And the dirty little secret is none of these companies that provide this type of service get you a credit freeze. And there's a reason for that we'll get into that. They may put fraud alerts on your credit report, but fraud alerts mean absolutely nothing. A lot of institutions don't even look at them, and there's no penalty for issuing credit because you've without notifying you if there's a fraud alert on there. But a credit freeze locks your credit report so that even if someone has your Social Security number and your personal information, they can't get at your credit report without the PIN that only you know. However, one reason that this is very much discouraged by the credit reporting agencies and the companies like LifeLock that work with them is that the credit reporting agencies, they don't make their money from you or I having our credit reports there. They make their money by releasing that information to companies and marketers. So when we freeze our account, they can't sell that information. And so although they're required by law to do it, they don't make it the simplest and easiest thing in the world to do.
Now,
it's really cheap and easy to do.
I've had a credit freeze for my wife and I for over 8 years.
Good for you.
And I encourage every one of my clients that comes in to credit freeze if they're not going to be doing any kind of major borrowing anytime soon. So I tell clients, go to the Maryland Attorney General, just Google search Maryland Attorney General credit freeze, and boom, they'll give you a whole page on how to do it, three websites to go click to, and easy enough to do it. So why don't you tell us how to do a credit freeze? Because you could do it in any state. Every state has a law on credit freeze.
Exactly. You know, we've got information on scamicide.com for every state as well. So people can go there. As you say, you can go to the Maryland Attorney General. It really is something people can do for themselves and should do for themselves.
It's $5 per person per credit bureau in the state of Maryland. So in Maryland, it's $15 to do TransUnion. I mean, it's $5 to do TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. That's $15, and same for my wife. So it was $30, one-time fee. And then if I want to thaw it, it's $5 to thaw it each time I need to thaw it. And sometimes I can just ask the company, you know, like if I'm buying a car, and I say, okay, who do you use as a credit bureau? And they'll say, well, we use Equifax. And then so I just unfreeze Equifax. Or they say, we use it randomly. And so now I have to unfreeze all three because I don't know which one they're going to hit. So that
it is a simple thing to do. It's not costly. You did bring up a really good point, and that is the credit freeze has to be done at all three of the major credit reporting agencies because they all work independently. So if you put a fraud alert, they'll share that, but it means nothing. The credit freeze, yeah, you got to do it at all three.
But now when you do it, I've also learned over 8 years that it comes with little nuisances that you might not even think of. For example, when you go to get car insurance from a new car insurance company, they all search your credit files. And if they can't see your credit file, they're going to put a credit score down that could be low and either deny you coverage or offer it to you at a much higher rate. I mean, it's just one of a thousand of these weird, quirky little things that a credit freeze can do, cause little nuisances.
But they are, you know, they're minor compared to
somebody stealing your credit identity.
Yep. Well, one of the things you say Social Security numbers, the biggest offender. So who is the biggest offender of allowing Social Security numbers to get out there?
Oh, pick them. Right now, it's companies, particularly in the healthcare industry, who don't need your Social Security number, but they ask for it.
Okay.
It's been the IRS. It's been the Office of Personnel Management. It's been all kinds of companies that are using it as an identifier and don't need it. And this is one of the things in the book. It's, you know, you go to a company and you tell them, I really, can I give you my driver's license number or something like that? And, you know, frankly, there are some companies that still say, no, we need your Social Security number. Now, I don't advise people to do it, but I used to see lurking around on the Internet. They're saying, well, you know, when people ask you for this, just give them Richard Nixon's Social Security number. And in point of fact, until last year, it was really easy to get the Social Security number of anyone who died. The Social Security Administration has something called the Death Master Index, where you can just look it up. So I looked up Nixon's, and sure enough, the number that was floating around on the Internet was indeed Richard Nixon's Social Security number. So,
Steve, you got to hold up with me because I got to take my last hard pause, and then I'm going to come back and finish up. And we're going to talk about your takes on how do you protect and the rules to follow if you do become a victim. Right now, we got to go to traffic. We'll be right back. Steve Wise. Do you have a financial planner? Have you ever thought of hiring one or just need a second opinion? The satisfaction guaranteed service of the financial physical is designed with you in mind. Many listeners, just like you, come to me, Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, looking for a firm that is fee-only and can offer comprehensive financial planning. The Financial Consulate has not grown by selling insurance, annuities, and bank products. Instead, we pride ourselves on the wealth of knowledge we can provide to you and your family. Learn more about the Financial Consulate and the services that we can provide at DrewTigg.com. That's DrewTigg.com. Or call to schedule a no-obligation introductory meeting at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE. All right, we're here with Steve Wiseman, and he wrote the book 50 Ways to Protect Your Identity in a Digital Age, and his website, Scamicide, is excellent. Scamicide.com is an excellent website, and as he was telling us, that's a great place you can go to and get a lot of these things we're talking about, whether it's getting off a marketing list or getting how to do a credit freeze or just hearing more of the information, because we're not going to get to all 50. We're almost finished, you know?
Yeah.
But
right.
I do have to ask this question, Steve. This is something that I tell my clients all the time. Do not pay for things with a debit card. Use a credit card. Do not use your debit card unless you're using it for an ATM machine to take money out, and only after you've looked at the machine and feel that it is, you know, protected and it nothing's tampered with it. What do you say?
I've got a kindred spirit, and you know, unfortunately, all too often we're telling people, and it's falling on deaf ears. Debit cards are used even more than credit cards, and they are so much more at risk. And here's the thing, and obviously you know this, and for your listeners, when you use a credit card, if fraud occurs, the law protects you for anything over $50, and frankly, no credit card company even charges you for those $50. However, your debit card is tied to your bank account, and the laws as far as protecting you from liability are not as good. As a matter of fact, if you don't pick up on the fact that your card has been accessed by an identity thief, you could end up losing your entire bank account. But let's make it worse. Let's say that you find out right away that your account has been accessed. This is your bank account, and what's going to happen is the bank is going to freeze that account so that you can't even access it while they investigate whether something is going on, whether that's a fraud or not. Also, another thing that people sometimes mix up when they use that debit card, they'll be asked, do you want to use this as a credit card or a debit card and put in a PIN or not? It is never being used as a credit card. All that's being done is a manner of how the processing is going to occur as far as payments and fees between the bank and your retailer. It is always a debit card. It is always coming out of your account, and it is always putting you in jeopardy. So I totally agree with you. Only use it at your ATM.
Absolutely. And you should only use a credit card that's not tied to your bank account unless you just can't get a credit card. And then if you can't and all you've got is a debit card, period, then only use it, at least only use it as a credit card, or even better yet, just pay cash for things. So anyway, so let's do a wrap-up here, Steve. Scamicide.com is your website. Get a lot of this information. What are the identity theft protection rules? And then tell us, what are the rules we follow if we become a victim? The big ones. We got 4 minutes.
Yeah, I'll tell you one of the two best things you can do, because biometrics, dual factor authentication, all of these things are terrific. They're coming in. But right now, it's your password and your security question. And so for your password, we're told, and you should, you should have a unique password for every account. But that becomes difficult for many people. Also, you want a complex password, but it doesn't have to be tough. So you take a phrase like, I don't like passwords, and you have capital letters, you have small letters, you've got an apostrophe in there, add a couple of exclamation points at the end. That's your base. That's a good base password. If for your Amazon account, make it, I don't like passwords, 2 exclamation points, AMA. And you can personalize.
Now everybody knows how to get into your Amazon account, Steve.
The other thing is your security questions, because the information on it, your mother's maiden name, where you went to high school, all of this stuff is readily available. So here's the thing. You use those security questions, and what's your mother's maiden name? It's grapefruit. You will remember that because it's just so damn silly, but no one is going to be able to guess that or find that online. So getting a good complex password that you can remember, unique for every account, and a nonsensical security question will help you a lot.
How about these apps that can help store all this stuff, like Passkey or something like that? What do you think of those?
You know, they're good, but one of my mottos is, trust me, you can't trust anybody. And the reason
well, we don't trust you, Steve.
Well, of course you can't trust me. I tell my students that. But the thing is, they're targets for the hackers. And so, yes, it may work. They can be helpful, but I think you can do this on your own.
Okay, so I've become a victim. What do I do? What are my rules?
Well, there's a lot of things you can do, but the biggest thing that you want to do is file a report with the local police and the federal and the Fair Trade Commission. And the
that sounds like a waste of time. But go ahead, tell us
why. It's not. It's a waste of time as far as are they going to catch someone? No, they're not. But when you go to dispute that those charges were illegitimate, you will have a police report that is on record showing that you reported it as illegitimate. And that's the main reason that you want to do that reporting.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. What else do I do? I'm a victim.
Okay. Which you also, if you want to get your credit report, you want to find out where the problems are on there. You want to request that the changes be done. And if you haven't put up that credit freeze, you want to put a credit freeze on there. But you really do need to look very, very carefully at your credit report, which you can get for free if you become a victim of identity theft, and make sure that this thing is clean. Get the credit reporting agencies to take off the bad stuff, and notify all of your creditors that you have become a victim, and to take the erroneous.
What about getting your credit report for free? Annualcreditreport.com, is that a good thing to do every year and look at it, even if you're not a victim?
Yeah, because there's a lot of mistakes that come up just.
But you told me not to trust anybody. Can I trust annualcreditreport.com?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is there are a lot of other sites that sound like that will end up charging you all kinds of fees for your so-called free credit report. So here again, I'd say go to scamaside.com, put in free credit report. It'll take you to where to get your free one, and you can get it from each of the credit reporting agencies free annually. But what I suggest people do is do it, get it from one, say Experian, and then 4 months later get it from Equifax, and then 4 months later get it from TransUnion. That way you're going to get three of them over the course of a year and for free.
And they're not that difficult to really read.
No. They've gotten much, much better. It used to be that the code was difficult, but now they're not difficult to read, and frankly, you can pick up if you've become a victim.
Steve, we really appreciate your time. I wish we could do all 50 of them. Maybe we ought to have a series of 10 shows with you to do all 50 of them, because it is the most important topic that people should be aware of right now.
So I'm not going to go live in Montana like you talked about, but I'm tired thinking about all the things that we have to do here. You got to be vigilant, though, if you're going to have a public footprint at all.
And your website again, Steve Wiseman, it's scamaside.com. Your book again, 50 Ways to Protect Your Identity in a Digital Age, New Financial Threats You Need to Know About and How to Avoid Them. Steve Wiseman, we really appreciate your time.
Thanks. Enjoy talking with you guys.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.